Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Maybe Next Year, the podcast that, when our backs are against the wall and when we need to get out of a difficult situation, you can count on us to dial Taiwan Jones. This is good evening, everybody. I'm Paul.
I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
And we all saw that coming, right? We're thinking, boy, you know, tough situation for the Bills here. 3rd and 9, they need to kill some clock. They need to try and get this to be a closer field goal. You know who's never had a touch in his career as a Bill? Taiwan Jones. Let's us put it in his hands, and it actually worked. I feel like that's the type of move that it inevitably fails. It loses 5 yards. They miss a long field goal. The Bucs drive and win, and we're talking about it. So I feel like the script has changed from what I would have planned to have talked about if you told me in advance what that play call was going to be. So, but all in all, really enjoyable game to watch.
That that was interesting, because it's the we need a run play, but it can't be just handing off to LeSean McCoy, you know, left, right, or center, because we did that the last 2 times and they'll know it's coming. But any kind of play that other than that, you're also only practiced probably like 3 times that week, so you're not really sure what you're gonna get. And then it's also, or it's a Tyrod Taylor run, but they had already done that on 3rd down in the red zone at the end of the second half. So you have to think the Bucs kind of see that one coming too. So that's when, you get the kind of end arounds. I like the wrinkle of using a running back in the end around. You're correct. I mean, we've been in that plenty of times before where we get too clever by half and we end up running a kind of, you know, Statue of Liberty play to Patrick DeMarco and it loses 6 yards. So I'm glad that one worked out.
I would like to point out that there was this weird thing about a guy named Taiwan Jones on Twitter this week. I don't know if you saw it, Paul. I know Scott's not.
I have not. I'm looking forward to being educated on this.
There was a whole Washington Post story about it too. About this guy. Some guy said, I'm on this flight, and this professor grades his test next to me. And if there's a Taiwan Jones at Howard, boy, you failed the F out of your midterm. That's what he tweeted. And what happened is, like, everybody named Taiwan Jones on Twitter who went to Howard, which there's more than one, was like, oh shit. And like, and so like that went viral, because it was this really, it seemed to be this really funny way that this guy named Taiwan Jones found out he failed his exam. And of course there are 2 Taiwan Jones in the NFL. One of them plays for the Jets, and you know, the other one had his first end around reverse touch at the game. So I thought it was a weird, wonderful confluence of events. And the other thing, of course, to note about the game, I guess, before Paul gives us the box score and breaks it down a little, is we all had Deontay Thompson kind of killing it. I think we all, in our fantasy segment last week, which I don't think we cut it for length. I hope everyone listened to our fantasy section. We said he was a quality and certain pickup. So
absolutely. I mean, I think if you told me,
that helped you guys out.
I mean, I think I'm a little disappointed he's not the Bills' leading receiver for the season instead of being their second.
give him like a quarter. If they had played overtime, he would be. So
I believe he has half the receiving yards this year as a Bill alone, not even including his Bears numbers, as Sammy Watkins has total this year. I think Sammy's about 264. Deontay's at, 10-something, 104 thereabouts. So yeah, and it's funny to think about the name Taiwan Jones. Like, now when you'd associate as a common name, like, you can think, oh, you know, that football player Mike Williams. Well, which one? Oh, the wide receiver. Oh, which one? You know, you could kind of go down that road. Taiwan Jones.
The one who played for the Lions. No, which one?
Yeah. So you have so many options there. But Taiwan Jones, not a name you would think of in that regard. So, we'll get started in our conversation on the game. It was an entertaining game. It was one that looked like the Bills had let get away, but there were some surprising performances. Of course, Deontay Thompson, we talked about, 4 catches, 107 yards. Zay Jones gets into the act with 2 catches for 17 on 74 targets. So not bad, you know, for approximately that.
Better.
Yeah. Talked about, we'll talk about LeSean too. He didn't do anything spectacular, but he didn't do anything super bad, except for when he ran into the loving arms of a Tampa defender after he turned around deep in his own territory. Otherwise, he grounded out for 91 yards. Tyrod, boy, you talk about a meaningful day. This was really good to see him. 268 yards, 20 of 33, a touchdown, no picks. Mind you, this is, I think, only the second time he's passed for more than 250 yards in a victory. Usually that's when the Bills have failed miserably. And the team put up total 434 yards of offense, pick up three turnovers again. Let's talk about the defense. On the upside, yeah, good job, helping to squash the Bucs rushing attack. They tried with Doug Martin, 20 carries, only 49 yards. They couldn't even break 50 yards on 20 carries. But Jameis Winston, I will tell you, I'm glad we will not see this gentleman again for four more years. 32 of 44 for 384, three touchdowns, one pick. OJ, is OJ Howard? OJ Howard. I almost wanted to call him CJ Howard for a second there. That was, I assume everyone is CJ. Six catches for 98 yards. I think right now he's actually still standing in the end zone at New Era Field. I think the stadium is empty.
It's still open.
Yeah, he's still there. But the pass defense got shredded, and we can go into some of the reasons why. But all in all, the first time in Bills history that they were at home with less than 3 minutes to go, trailing by 7-1, which is a statistic I found near impossible to believe, but I trust Sal Majorana from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle with that stat. So I feel like we always start the game analyses with Scott when I'm writing, so I'm going to switch it over to Frank this time. I don't know, Frank, what your thoughts were on this game, if some things stuck out to you, but offensively, defensively, or just, general impressions of Bills Bucks.
It was an impressive football game. It's not any other way to cut it. I think that this week and next week, specifically with the Raiders, you're looking at two teams that their talent, at least on one side of the ball, probably isn't accurately reflected in their record. And so the fact that, they only won by three over a 2-win team, I don't really want to put a lot of stock in worrying about that. I think that they did a good job against what was a really good offense. Now look, the deep passing offense obviously presented a bit of a problem to the corner thin Buffalo Bills. I think that the OJ Howard big tight end with linebackers covering him is basically a harbinger of things to come when you play against the Patriots. I think that Gronkowski is probably going to destroy this secondary. I kind of assumed that anyway going into this season. But overall, I thought this was a good game where they had a counterpunch and a late counterpunch. I'm sure you've heard, this is the only time in the Bills' history that they were down by seven or more with 3 minutes or less to go and came back to win.
You may have heard me say that within the last 2 minutes of this podcast.
Exactly. Well, again, I was expecting you to go to Scott, so I just would like to repeat that statement. I do listen. It's just, you said a lot. It's worth repeating. I think LeSean McCoy played well. I was much happier that Tyrod Taylor used his legs this week. I said it last week. I feel like that was the problem against Cincinnati. He should have taken off more. Holy hell, is this Thompson guy a find? And the fact that he knows Taylor from before and they have a relationship and that obviously fed into him going 4 for 4 for 107 yards. I liked what I saw from Nick O'Leary. Zay Jones. I don't know. At least he caught two balls. I don't know what to tell you. He's a young guy. They got some turnovers. So all in all, it was a formula for a good Bills win, a needed Bills win, given how the rest of the league shook out and they've set themselves up. I know we'll talk about this later about what kind of team this is, but, I'm really glad they won this game because I think it really would be ugly if they hadn't won this game.
All right, Scott.
So real quick, I want to start off with one interesting stat that I read. It's that the Bills have never won a game with down by seven with less than 3 minutes left to go. Did you guys hear that?
I feel like I've heard it twice recently, and even in my own voice. It's crazy.
That's really weird. Okay, anyway, I don't know why it just popped into my brain, but...
I wish Paul would have shared that with us if he's heard it twice already.
I'm not doing my job. That's on me.
It's okay though. It's all right.
We'll have to get on with this. I will attempt to not repeat any other points that Frank made, which is not likely to happen. I will say
all my points were wrong.
I will say that I want to talk a little bit about
which by the way, we had a listener specifically call Frank out for being wrong on Twitter. So we'll get to that in Facebook and Twitter questions.
Yay.
What else is new? This person just met me. Great.
I want to talk a little bit about Tyrod, because I feel like you can never stop talking about Tyrod. Is kind of like, he is the lightning rod for this team. Like, it's like Rex Ryan, you know, that was one of the theories of Rex Ryan, right? Was that like, oh, well, he gets a lot of media attention on him, so he takes a lot of the criticism for the team in an attempt to shield them from the media and draw, you know, it was all bullshit, because that's what Rex Ryan is. And he just likes to, he likes being the center of attention because he's Rex Ryan. It has no, he has no nobility about that. Tyrod, I think, probably does not actually enjoy being the lightning rod from the team. There was a very interesting article, I don't know if you guys read last week, and I think
by Kimberly Martin, who I thought when I was reading her articles, she just came to the Buffalo News about 3 or 4 months ago. I thought, wow, she is such a good writer. I think she'll be gone in 6 months. Include that resume. She's coming to the Washington Post next month. So.
Wow. Okay. That's funny.
So Buffalo gets the good sports writer, and then it goes to Washington, just like Buffalo gets good podcasters, and then they all move to Washington.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's pretty much the same thing. But Tyrod, yeah, so Tyrod, I don't think, enjoys being kind of the face of the franchise per se. And he certainly doesn't, I'm sure, enjoy having a bunch of people pile on about how good he is or how bad he is, and that, you know, he's going, you know, the team's not going to work with him. You know, it's just a matter of time before they get somebody else. Everyone wants to run him out of town on the rail just because he doesn't play well in the preseason. And obviously there's the kind of whole front office that maybe that, you know, whether that affects the front office and how they've kind of changed his contract around so that he's really pretty easy to release after this season. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't appreciate any of that either, but you know, in some ways, it's if it motivates him, all the better for this season, because clearly, you know, he had a great game. We haven't, you know, he has had a couple of great games. He's had a couple of stinkers. This kind of repeats his pattern of, like, he'll have a completely, you know, horrible game, and then he'll come out the next week and play well. I wouldn't want to discount the fact that having Jordan Matthews and Demiante Thompson, two guys who can actually catch the ball at the wide receiver position, probably helps him. That's something that we can kind of, it might be easy to forget, and that the quarterback, and that's probably what I should really talk about the most, is that the quarterback is not the only guy on the team who plays. Yes, he has the ball in his hands every time, and so by the sheer fact, he is more likely to, you know, have a statistical probability of making an error at some point in the game. But actually, Tyrod usually does not make too many errors in a game. In fact, if that's the one criticism you want to make of him, is that he doesn't try enough plays to win you the game because he's too concerned about making an error. But in this game, that was the difference between him and Winston. I mean, Winston was, you know, obviously was bombs away and had a bunch of great receivers, and they were catching balls and everything, but he threw one interception at the end of the half when they had a chance to kind of run their 2-minute drill and get some points before the half, and he blew that. And then obviously he lost another fumble on a sack fumble because he didn't have the rush coming, or he didn't feel the rush coming. So, you know, I think Tyrod's a good talent. I don't think anyone's, you know, going to put him up there with Tom Brady, and we know that. But, you know, I think this is a good time to reinforce that Tyrod is a perfectly capable quarterback, as long as he has people to throw for him and, you know, some guys who can block occasionally and a little bit of a run game, which was nice to see again, just to see enough to take the pressure off. And as Frank said, he was also using his feet well again. So I think, you know, obviously, you know, we can talk more about the D if we want, but that's my initial thought on the overall game.
Yeah, and when you were talking about Tyrod, Scott, I don't know if you happen to catch this, and I'm not generally a big Bleacher Report fan. Did you see their player spotlight on Tyrod Taylor by chance? Oh, this is good. It's almost like you read it, and normally, and I know why people listen to podcasts, so we can read off of websites, but because this is one of those, it's kind of worth it. So it gives you two versions of what happened. So here's the versions, bull short. What happened? Weird anti-Tyrod narrative version. Tyrod Taylor again made a few plays with his legs, relied heavily on LeSean McCoy, and got really lucky to lead the Bills to a 30-27 win over the Buccaneers. Even though Taylor cannot locate open receivers and is not a Tom Brady-like pocket passer and is therefore totally useless and yucky. And then their actual summary, what happened, unbiased report from Planet Earth version. Taylor threw for 268 yards and one touchdown despite a receiver core full of injured players, veteran fourth receiver types, converted quarterbacks, and Senior Bowl heroes. He had 53 rushing yards and led a fourth quarter comeback when the Bills defense abandoned him. So it's a right along the same lines of what Scott was saying. And, you know, it says what it means. Taylor has thrown just 2 interceptions a season for an offense built on ball control. Hater interpretation, he plays it too safe. And manufacturing offense out of players like Deontay Thompson, Logan Thompson, Nick O'Leary. Hater interpretation, he needs to get weapons like rookie Zay Jones and broken thumb Jordan Matthews more involved. So the article goes on. It's definitely good to check out. But it goes to emphasize, you know, we on this podcast said, we don't necessarily think Tyrod is that franchise-type Brady quarterback, but he's a quarterback who can win games. And you look at the Denver Broncos when they won the Super Bowl a couple of years back, they did it without a Peyton Manning that was no longer a franchise quarterback level Peyton Manning. Remember, he was backing up Brock Osweiler, who I managed to not call Dan Orlovsky there, even though I really wanted to. You know, he came in when Osweiler ended up being totally ineffective. So, you know, Tyrod can win you games, and you saw the way he can win you games with his performance the other day on Sunday's game. So, you know, we talked a lot about the comeback. I think for those of you who didn't know, when the Bills have been trailing with three – oh, no, I'm sorry, we've done that. the return of the running game, we talked about great to see them put up 170-plus yards of offense. Obviously, Deontay Thompson. Now I think you get Thompson in there one side, you get Matthews on the other, and you make Zay your slot receiver and see how that goes. And I know that's a blatant overreaction after one game, but it's not really because you think Zay Jones is a better outside option than Deontay Thompson at this point. I don't think you can argue that he is. So, you know, one thing we didn't really talk about is the Jordan Poyer injury, that and the E.J. Gaines injury. Those are both listed as day-to-day by Coach McDermott. That can affect the secondary, you know, and the lack of depth that they have. We saw Jameis Winston shred it. It's not going to get easier against Derek Carr, who shredded a healthier Bills secondary, albeit a completely different one last season. So, you know, these are definitely concerns going into this week and beyond, and as we'll discuss later, you have to keep in mind when we assess the team as a whole. So continuing on with the game, I think we'll go to, if Scott is ready, we can head over to Three Stars, and then we'll talk about the Facebook and Twitter questions and address the game from that standpoint before moving on. So, Scott, what are your thoughts on the Three Stars of this game?
So this is, I think this is probably...
Trois Estrellas.
I think we... Les Trois Étoiles. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about this is I think this is probably going to be the first game that we've had a Bills win where none of the stars will be on defense. Because obviously that's been the MO this season. So I will start with honorable mention, and that is Jameis Winston of the 384 yards passing minus six on the sack, and obviously a very crucial sack because it obviously led to a fumble. He obviously also had 3 touchdowns and an interception. Although one of those touchdowns, I'm going to go ahead and say that you or I or anyone listening could have probably thrown one of those touchdowns.
Because you could have gotten would have thrown one of the interceptions.
Sorry, one of the touchdowns. Because that OJ Howard one, that was literally like you could have that ball. It's struggling. Lorenzo Alexander was trying to explain how wide open he got, and it still didn't really make a lot of sense. But regardless, it was not. I'm deducting half a touchdown because he did find him, but still. Obviously I think one too many turnovers and, you know, that kind of hurt them in the end, obviously a good performance given all the yards. And, he was under pressure quite a bit actually from the Bills, despite the production he made. So, your third star is OJ Howard, who, did catch that one touchdown. I think I give him the star and I don't give it to Jameis Winston because I feel like that is the one where it's like, you're literally just standing there like, I can't be this open, can I? And you're almost distracted by how open you are. And then you drop it because you just like, you're so like, I feel like I've seen guys, I feel like I've seen people on the Bills drop passes like that. I feel like I remember Stevie Johnson. Stevie Johnson wasn't that open, but he was still pretty open when he dropped that touchdown a couple of years ago.
It happened against the Chiefs, whoever it was.
Yeah, there's probably one of those two. But anyway, he was a tough matchup the entire game. Not just that, and he also had the other touchdown as well. So he is clearly a beast, and obviously if the Bills drafted him with the first round pick, I'm perfectly happy with Tre'Davious White, but I think we'd also be happy with OJ Howard too, because he seems like he's kind of coming on. Your second star is going to be LeSean McCoy. 23 carries, 91 yards, and 2 touchdowns on the ground, in addition to 5 catches for 31 yards. in the air. Nice to see him back on the in the étoile, and see him and producing, because obviously, as we've said, the Bills, you know, kind of need some balance. Like every offense actually usually is much better when they have balance, and this particular case, I think it obviously helped the Bills win this game, so he gets the second star.
I think that's the closest the Bills can come to losing while rushing for 170 plus yards. If they do that again next week, it's going to be a much much more comfortable victory, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, but defense is looking on Sunday. I don't know.
Good point.
And then first star, Tyrod Taylor, 20 of 33 for 268 yards with one touchdown passing. And he also had, six carries for 53 yards on the ground, bringing his team down from 7 points down. And then, finding Deontay Thompson open, making plays throughout the day with his feet, dealing with an offensive line, dealing with new receivers, everything I just said in my previous segment. So first star, Tyrod Taylor.
Huzzah
indeed.
No Steven Hashka, who did miss.
No, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because he did kick another 50-plus yard field goal to make himself the my dinner has arrived. Why, thank you, dear. I've just been hand-delivered a delicious meal by my wife. So I'm told that our fans like the fact that we have personal lives that you can audibly disseminate when you're listening, whether it's sirens outside, babies crying, plates being washed, and we all contribute to this. So I thought I'd announce my dinner is here.
The accounts and descriptions of tonight's Paul's dinner are the exclusive content of Maybe Next Year and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted without the express written authority of Maybe Next Year.
Yep. And that is what we're sticking with. So Facebook and Twitter question we'll get to. I just want to note to Frank did mention Hauschka. He's now tied the record for 50 plus yard field goals in a row with 12. Let's hope he breaks that. He did miss a shorter one earlier. And I thought it was the feed I was watching was bad. It was difficult to tell when he was making or missing field goals. But no, apparently no one else could tell when field goals were made or missed. It's the only time in a telecast I've had to look at the officials for any indication of whether the field goal went through or was wide by 40 yards. So get on that, Fox. You got to be more careful next time. Mm-hmm. So Facebook and Twitter questions. I'm almost slowing this down, and we'll start with Facebook, because we just have one Facebook question, because Steven, normally he gets on there within 8 or 9 hours, and we posted 13 hours ago. So we're very much hopeful that Steven chimes in before we finish this. But we'll deal with the one Facebook question and go on to Twitter. Josh Pinnell notes, I love the run game got going on Sunday. Really like what Tolbert can do for short yardage. And they brought that, and that's something we didn't bring up. Boy, Tolbert looked as good as he's looked this season in that game. But when they need to give Shady a break, I really think they need to give Taiwan Crazy Legs Johnson more carries. What you guys think? We'll start with Scott on this one, what he thought of his brief exposure to Taiwan, our brief exposure to Taiwan this week. By the way, two snaps this game, two targets, one big official catch, even though it was really an end round.
Yeah, I mean, I think Taiwan is a guy that we do need to work in a little bit more, just because Tolbert is so limited in what he can do. Like, you kind of know he's getting it between the tackles, or at least you're not concerned about him going outside the tackles. Like, you can kind of like just plan on, stopping the middle. And then if he goes outside, fine, like you're going to beat him out there anyway. If he's going to get anywhere, he's got to get going kind of, he's like, what's his name in the X-Men, Frank? The guy who runs.
Which one?
The guy in X-Men.
Quicksilver.
No.
Quicksilver.
The guy he picks up momentum. Juggernaut.
Juggernaut. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So he gets going forward. He's very hard to do. But once he's going sideways, then he can't. It's hard for him to turn. Anyway, so I'm definitely in favor.
Yeah, what you do is you get a big wet concrete that's not set, and he runs into it, and then he sinks.
You got him.
Yeah, you got him.
Yeah. Anyway, Mike Tolbert may or may not be a supervillain. That's all I'm going to say. Taiwan Jones, yeah, no, I think he does need more carries, because I think he can get outside more. And he's a little bit – I mean, he's obviously a very much more inferior version of LeSean McCoy, but in that sense, he is capable of running some of the similar plays that LeSean does, whereas I think you're much more limited. I just don't know. Maybe he can't do as much in the pass game or the pass protection game, which obviously is pretty key. So that would be the only caveat to that statement.
All right. What are your thoughts, Frank, on Taiwan, the Bills? You know, whether the Bills might want to do for a change of pace.
On Republic of China, general.
Right.
Yes, right. First of all, we don't want to offend the Chinese government because they'll probably be downloading our podcast soon. So, no, I think Scott's thoughts are fine, and I don't want to add to them because I think that is a reasonable understanding, and I think that I think this team is not afraid to sit players down and try new players. So I'm excited to see that they will probably use him again.
All right. Well, I'm glad Frank, rested up on this because he's about to take some grilling. He's going to have to defend himself a little bit here. Our old buddy Ryan goes by going by Shapes and it was Shapes Enabler. Now we've changed it to Shapes Ensembler. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel it used to be Shapes Enabler. Maybe I'm wrong. Notes, would you kindly address, localize the source of Frank's cavalier / pompous / pessimistic / naive attitude in saying we couldn't put up 30, you know, and said,
excuse me.
Whoa. Yeah. Shots fired. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Okay. So, excuse me. First of all, I believe I said the team would win by 56 last week. So in order to win by 56, you have to score at least 30. Mr. Shape, you can't even spell whatever the hell your Twitter handle is supposed to be. Second of all,
long time listener, you know what? Frank. Tried to, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. Then great. They're not going to quit. That's fine. Now we've got it. Second of all, I don't think that Shapes Ensembler like ran to Las Vegas and bet the over on 30 points for the season or any particular game here. So I don't think I was the only person who thought 30 points, you know, by the time they traded everyone away, looked like a reasonable statistic. So like if the ultimate point here is I was wrong and maybe he guessed right, then good for you on your guessing. Well done. Your guessing was better than my guessing this time around, and you should be hosting this podcast, except I own all the equipment and I'm the one who does the Google Hangout every week, so I host the podcast. Good for you. I hope you made money on the fact that the 30 points. I'm just happy they did it.
Yep, Frank is picking his toys up off the lawn and he's going home.
Frank
unfortunately spends a little too much time on social media occasionally, and sometimes gets a little defensive about things he said, and that's right. Why he doesn't spend as much time as he does on social media. But that's okay. Right.
I quit for quite a while, and I'm back, and I have my little walled garden on Twitter that makes me happy. It tells me about baseball and a little about football,
and
nobody gives me shit because I may or may not have. Right, I don't even get right.
So I'm a little echo chamber, and I don't need to listen to anyone else. Thank you very much. Goodbye, rest of the world.
I was worried about Frank blocking me when we disagreed on Zay Jones' responsibility in last week's loss.
Blocked.
So it's close.
Done. You're blocked. I can't hear you on this podcast anymore, Paul.
You've actually blocked B-Bills MNY, and one of those podcasts.
I mean, like, if he had just said, like, you know, would you kindly address Frank's incorrect assumption that the team couldn't score 30? That's understandable. But, like, cavalier, pompous, like, that's the whole point of this podcast, is we are cavalier, pompous, and pessimistic.
I think we're also naive as well. Yeah, we don't, you know. I think
you'd be naive if you came into this season or any particular game and said, yeah, of course they're going to score 30. They're like, 30's the basement for this team a game.
I think we've learned a couple of things. One, everyone needs to criticize Frank more because that is good pod right there.
Yeah.
That is the most fired up Frank.
Our pre-pod discussion is over. We're all kind of tired today. Let's just power through and try to be entertaining. And now we've found it. So keep the Frank hot takes coming.
We need to make sure there's at least one negative comment every week because that is enjoyable. I enjoyed that tremendously. I agree with you, Frank, because we haven't scored 30 points at all this year until this week. So,
while you do this, I'm pulling up the 2016 Buffalo Bills schedule. Don't do this too. I'll do this, and I'll find the last time we scored 30 points. Okay,
yeah.
Which Fair is enough. Probably like we probably did it like six times last year, and I don't remember.
I probably did it week 17.
Right.
So some good discussion we had, and kudos to our colleagues over at
week,
Bill.
Week 16, we scored 31, and week 16, we scored 33.
But didn't we lose in week 16?
But we also had, you know, like
we did. We lost to the Dolphins
receiver then too. So
it was right, slightly different. We scored 10 against the Jets the last week. So that's 1-2 times we scored 30. 45 against the 49ers, which shouldn't even count. 30 against last year's Rams, which shouldn't even count. 33 against the Cardinals last year, and 37 against the Jets. So, okay, so it happened 4 or 5 times against really bad teams.
Well, and I guess, I mean, and that's kind of the point. Maybe the
right
Bucks might not be the best.
Maybe the defense. Right. I don't even remember saying when I said that. Like, if I said that at the beginning of the year, that's totally different than me saying it last week when I clearly said they would win by 56. So,
next question. Intended that the Bills score 4 defensive touchdowns in the course of Sunday's game.
Reasonable. We're going to score 29 offensive points. The rest were all going to be defensive and special teams.
So Bills and Beers started a great discussion yesterday, and we'll get into that. I want to recap the whole thing because it goes into what we're going into next with, you know, what is kind of a reasonable number of wins to expect the way they've started this year. And Ryan, you know, noted, he observed they're very close. The team's already very close to what he predicted as a win total for the year. And what I did too, I think I had the team at 6-10. So El Super jumped in on that one, Scarecrow, but we had just some good discussion. I encourage everyone to read that recap on Twitter when they can, but we're gonna have too many concrete questions. Frank L, now, you know what, we'll say Frank L's comments for now. I do want to point out,
sure.
I do want to point out that I had the most liked and retweeted comment of the season thus far on this podcast, on Twitter, where I noted, tweeting today from Washington, D.C., and still closer to O.J. Howard than any Bills defender was on that play. So kudos to me on that. So the last question we'll go into, and again, just before I do that, going, you know, Brian, always great talking to you. Orlando, as always, Riza. Grant, nice interacting with you a little bit more this week than we had previous weeks. Jesmond, Deplorable Fugazi, you know, really just a great Twitter week. You can tell when the team is doing well because I struggled to keep up with the mentions and everyone who's participating, and it's just really great. But Orlando has a question which will launch us here into our next segment on this. Orlando asks, and this goes along with the Bills and Beers and Rock Pile Report discussion we all had, are we sipping the Kool-Aid Sean McDougal is handing out? And yes, we're going to call him Sean McDougal because that's what
Sean McDougal.
Okay.
McDougal, yeah. Seemed like a bunch of hot air when he walked in, but things feel different at one Bills drive. So the question becomes, and we'll start with Scott on this one while Frank catches his breath from the last segment here. You know, I think it's a good time to kind of stop and reassess where the team is at, because this team, it was 4-2 the previous two seasons. We're cautiously optimistic, mildly pessimistic. So this is not uncharted territory for the team, but considering the attitude we all had about this team going into the year and the fact that it's not like super surprising things have happened and turns out like, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example, like E.J. Gaines is a superstar, and we didn't realize it. No, but he is a solid football player, which maybe we didn't expect, or on offense, that, Zay Jones is really going to be a superstar receiver. He's actually been a bit of a letdown, so they haven't done anything shocking, and yet here they are. So starting with Scott, you know, 4-2 in the, you know, technically in a playoff seed after 6 weeks in the AFC in the midst of an extreme parity division, but also coming off a game where they are coming off a week where everyone they played this year lost last week's most in convincing fashion. So, you know, with all this conflicting information, what are your thoughts, Scott's impressions so far, Scott, with 6 out of 16 in the books?
So, I mean, if you want, I think we can focus on the coaching and the culture thing, because I feel like that's the most interesting wrinkle, because we've talked about this a little bit the weeks prior. But I would contrast this a bit with, I think the theory is that I think maybe why I'm a little more confident, and I'm going to do some research right now and verify that's why, is that I feel like we're a little more confident because the plan as explained to us is sort of working. I feel like in previous years, it wasn't necessarily like, I'm looking back at last year's 4-2 start. I think some of that was, you know, we can point to you know, Rex was trying to win with defense, but we weren't really winning with defense. We were kind of winning with offense. Like, we were beating teams because we were putting up a lot of points, which is not really
what a lot of 30-plus point games. Like,
yeah.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we you know, we're getting out the old numbers here, but we scored, all right, so 7, then 31, 33, 16, 30, and 45 points those first 6 weeks last year, which is kind of one of those things where you can kind of, maybe why we were a little more pessimistic or you know, not as convinced that it may come together or concerned about how the schedule may play out is because you don't see how that's sustainable, that maybe the offense, if it comes back to earth, the defense isn't going to be there to pick them up, which is obviously kind of what happened to a certain extent. And the defense obviously arguably got worse. With this team, I feel like there's still, I think the injury thing is still very much out there. And I think that's kind of the thing that no matter what your culture is in the locker room, you can't control who gets injured and who doesn't, regardless of, you know, how awesome your coach is. So that I think is going to be a big tale of what happens the second half of the season. But I say the reason that maybe I'm a little more optimistic is because to this point, now obviously we've started to see some cracks in this the last 2 weeks, is that the defense has been the strong point, and that's how McDermott has kind of built the team to win. And so maybe that's why we're, you know, because that those things mesh, that's how it's going to put together. Now, obviously, the offense can kind of help by scoring more points when it gets into these kind of shootout modes like we did on Sunday. But I don't think we're going to be comfortable relying on them to do that because it's just not really how we've established the team. And it's going to feel more like we're kind of skating on thin ice when we do that. So I guess I'll start there.
Yeah, that's good. Frank, what are your thoughts on, is it for real? And that's a loaded question, but it's something.
I just looked at a bunch of recent seasons before, and I realized obviously last year they were 4-2, and the time before that they were 4-2, I think the last time was 2011, where they actually got to 5-2. That's the year where they blanked the Redskins in Toronto for their fifth win. I think that made them 5-2, and that's as optimistic as I felt about the Bills in the last 10, I think, other than the first time they finished 9-7, which I don't know if that might be just outside of 10 years. They, you know, then they cratered. They lost to the Jets, Cowboys, Dolphins, Jets, Titans, Chargers, Dolphins, before they finally beat the Broncos and then dropped one more to the Patriots. So I guess my thoughts on this are twofold. First of all, 4-2 is not as common of a start as you would think for the Bills. There's quite a few 5-3s, which would still sort of be in there. I think the thing that encourages me is their two losses. They were there at the end. they had a legitimate shot to steal one against Carolina, and they weren't so out of it against the Bengals. To me, that's qualitatively different than like sort of getting like rocked by the Jets last year in the second week, like out of nowhere. It's a little bit different. I think that feeds into some of Scott's thoughts on it as well. I think the other thing is this is a bad year for football teams. Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of very good football teams. And so the Bills have managed to be slightly better so far. Maybe they're not qualitatively different than the Bengals or the Raiders. And it's just that they've gotten a couple of bounces so far. Well, that happens sometimes. And it hasn't really happened to the Bills in the last 20 years. And so it could be for real based solely on the fact that they're going to win against a couple of crappy teams, and they're going to be less crappy than what is a very crappy field for the AFC this year, apart from really Kansas City, probably Pittsburgh and New England. If you start looking at the New York Times playoff generator and stuff, like the winnable games on their schedule. Yeah, right. That's dangerous, but I looked at it. But like, you know, there are some winnable games, and that puts them in really good position. Even with 9 wins, I think 10 would probably still clinch it. So, I mean, can they win 6 more games? Probably. They really probably can. Unless there is a Jekyll and Hyde situation, if this is the team that you're going to get this, you know,
20 to now 30 points a game. And they're going to limit their, you know, they're going to be able to limit some of these offenses to under 30 or certainly like at times around 20. Well, they're going to win their fair share of those games. And with 10 games left, if they win five, that's 9 games. And they would just need one more, really. You know, they got to go 6-4, and that's very doable for this team. So, are they for real? Give me 2 more weeks. I don't know, but I don't think it's just a flight of fancy optimism to believe that this team could sneak in or be good enough.
Can I follow up briefly with Frank on one thing, Paul?
Oh, yeah. I'll have a few more bites of my food here.
By all means. So what happens in 2 more weeks, assuming that they win Oakland and the Jets game, Frank? Does that mean that you're expecting them to go to the playoffs? You're going to be disappointed or frustrated that they're not? Or you're
I think that's what happens, because I by that point you've got 6 wins, and I think you are chalking up, even if you're chalking up both Patriots games as losses. I mean, you're going to have a game again. You're going to have 2 chances against the Dolphins, which are obviously not gimmies. You're going to lose to the Chiefs, I would think, right? So,
You've got
the Colts at home. You've got 2. So you're at 6. You've got to beat the Colts for 7, and then you've got to take 2 more games, and one of them can be against the Dolphins, and you have a Saints team, which is coming on, but I mean, how different are they from like the Raiders? You got a Chargers team that is a bit Jekyll and Hyde, you know, like that's it. You're right cusp now, and you've got like, if you can't beat the fucking Colts at home, like get out of my face, right? So
you're gonna be upset you're gonna be expecting the playoffs because the rest of the schedule shakes out the way it does.
I think if they get 2 more wins, if they get to 6-2, okay, and they've beaten the Raiders and the Jets, and those are 2 like other AFC competitive teams, you're really talking like that needs to be the goal then. Like the standard has changed. This team is now competitive with the other teams that would be competing for a wild card, even if they're not really going to be competitive with the Patriots. And I'm only saying that because I've been watching that for 17 years, that I can't bring myself to say that they could be competitive with the Patriots, even though they're functionally tied for the lead right now. I just can't bring myself to believe or say that. Okay. But I mean, like Saints Chargers, 2 games against the Dolphins. You got to win 2 of those.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's fair. Yeah,
and the Colts.
Yeah, and obviously the Colts, and then you got to get these next 2 too. I mean, it's right. Not easy, but at the same time, like all of these other teams. I mean, I think that's what it is. Is that I think you kind of were alluding to it. Is that all these other AFC teams are flawed? I mean, Oakland.
Yeah.
Only recently figured out their offense. The Jets somehow have stringed together, you know, 3 wins, but you know, one of those was against the Browns. Yeah.
The tanking Bills and a New York writer called the Bills Jets opener tank bowl. Those teams' combined record right now is 7-6.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And New England, obviously, they seem to have shaken off the rust on defense, but they still have. I don't think that their talent has qualitatively changed, obviously, in the last couple of weeks. And the Chargers obviously kind of came to, you know, they let the Raiders kind of back into that game. And so they have their own flaws as well. And obviously the Dolphins, you know, who knows who's going to be starting a quarterback with them. So all of these other teams are equally, you know, that's the parity that's built in the system in the NFL, is that theoretically this is how it's supposed to work. Like you're really not that far from being out of, you know, out of the playoffs to getting back in, because the teams in front of you are not, you know, or you know, at least getting into the playoffs. And it's not like the NBA where it's like, unless you have 4 superstars, you really can't compete with the Warriors. Like that's not the situation.
Right. And it's not a year where like the Ravens are very good and the Broncos are also good. And so like, where are you even going to get your first or second wild card shots from? Right. Like,
yeah. Like, no, that's a good
point. There are just years where like those teams are going to win with all going to finish with 10 wins. And so, you know, like you might not get in with 10 wins. So, and that doesn't look like that this year. It looks like all those teams are going to be struggling to get to 9 or 10 wins. And Buffalo currently is ahead of all of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah. And you guys really hit so many of the major points I was was going to hand. One thing you said, Frank, which you emphasized, and I mentioned this last week, is hey, if they're winning the next two games, they will be 6-2. And that is, as I mentioned in last week's podcast, never has happened during the drought. They've gone to 5-3 before, but they have never gotten to that 6-2 number. If you can get to that 6-2 number and your AFC record is what, 5-1 at that point, because they're 1-1, or excuse me, no, they're 2-1 against the, no, they're 2-1 against the NFC. So I guess they're 4-1, but still, you know, yeah. That you get the Jets, I shouldn't say in your rearview mirror, but all you have to do is finish with at least as good a record as the Jets, because you've automatically won all tiebreakers. You've won the head-to-head tiebreaker against the Raiders. You know, speaking to the point Scott made about there's no one really that good in the AFC, everyone has at least two losses. Every single team in the AFC has at least two losses. The Patriots, Chiefs, and Steelers, I think, are probably the best three teams, but they are all extremely flawed, as both Frank and Scott pointed out as well. So you are looking at a year where there is a ton of parity. The only really bad teams in the AFC are the Browns and Colts. And of course, the Bills have the Colts later on the schedule, and they have this game they should be expected to win. So there's at least five wins, you would think, if they win the games they should. So these are, I feel differently about this team than I did at the beginning of the year. That they're, I really like how they've done a good job of emphasizing their strengths of Tyrod in the running game, which everyone knew they would. I like that the defense, you know, has really, you know, up until the last couple games, but specifically last game where they just gave up a ton of yardage. But even still, they got turnovers. So they're making plays. I feel like Rex's defense gave up a ton of yards, but didn't make any big plays. Remember the sacks and the sacks and the turnovers went way, way down from the Rex defense following the Jim Schwartz defense. So, you know, one thing that we have to be careful of with defense, the pass rush hasn't been all that good the last couple of games, and the depth is the type of thing where once you start throwing Sharice Wrights in the secondary, they start throwing it everywhere and you're getting beat. So I've got to hopefully stay healthy with Gaines and Poyer and the rest of the crew back there. But yeah, this is there for the taking more this year. Probably not the division. The Patriots always seem to get stronger as the year goes on. Those two losses could be all they have. You never know. Or they could be 10-6, but regardless, they're still a strong team. The Dolphins, we used to, you know, a lot of people were joking about them, the whole Jay Cutler thing, like, oh, Tannehill's down, they signed Jay Cutler, what a joke. Newsflash, as we've discussed in the podcast, Ryan Tannehill is not all that good. They did not make the playoffs last year because of Ryan Tannehill. In fact, when they clinched it against the Bills, for those who remember, Matt Moore was the starting QB that day. So they are dependent on their defense and the J.H.I. show at running back for getting there. So, you know, I've talked longer than I expected on this, but the point being that there is an absolute ton of parity right now in the AFC, and the Bills have a real chance to rise above these next couple weeks. And 6-2 is by no guarantee. You know, we had a long discussion on Twitter as part of our discussion with Bills and Beers and Rock Viral Report and some of our listeners about how it's hard to really expect more than two wins out of the next four games based on the opponents and the depth and so forth. But we can also agree all of the next four games are to some degree winnable, including the next two. So really, you know, anything can happen. And I can say this with 100% certainty anyway. This team is already far more entertaining than I expected them to be this season, and that's made it for a much more enjoyable season of football watching than I had anticipated by mid to late October. So, you know, I think we've pretty well beaten that dead horse into the ground. So we'll talk about some of the roster moves and potential roster moves. The Bills did release Kalen Clay yesterday. Kalen, we barely knew thee. You did have one big catch in the game, and that was good. You came over in the trade for, help me remember his name, guys. The defensive back.
Nope, not going to help you.
Damn. McCray?
No, well, that's who they signed after they got rid of, which we'll get into in a second. He went to the Panthers.
Timor.
Big draft pick last year. What was his name? Timor? Kevon Seymour. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Very good, Scott. So it's Kevon
Seymour.
There
it is.
Anyway, so they claimed a Tony McCray, undrafted rookie free agent, obviously looking for some secondary depth. So I think we're assuming based on Deontay Thompson's performance last week that he'll be good for about two interceptions and four defended passes, maybe a forced fumble as well. So
yeah, exactly.
That seems to be what they're doing. So again, I've I always gave Doug Whaley credit for the one thing he did well, which is turn over the bottom of the roster. So far, so good in Buffalo, and hopefully McCray, even if he's only with the organization 6-8 weeks or the rest of the year, whatever it is, can make some positive make a positive impact. Potential roster moves. They have brought in Rod Streeter for a workout. You may remember him from the preseason. Obviously, Philly Brown has stopped returning their calls because all they do is call him. He comes to Buffalo, and then by the time he gets there, they cut him again. So I think Philly's had it. That's just I have no source on that. That's just my impression.
All right.
Potential moves, and we don't have to go into too much depth on this, but I think it's interesting to discuss nonetheless. The names Cordy Glenn and Marcel Darius being thrown around in trade. So I'll just ask, and I'll start with Frank first on this one.
Surely.
What does it take for you to consider moving Darius and Glenn? Is it certain picks? Is it certain players? Is it certain level draft picks? What is it that would make you willing to part with them? Or do you think that, no, these are two guys, especially after a guy we didn't mention, Darius, had a great week of practice last week, by all accounts, and played a good game. Like, I noticed him. So,
yeah, one of the coaches said something that, like, he played the way they needed them to play.
Yeah, Leslie Frazier, defensive coordinator, said that. So, I don't know what are on Glenn or Darius or even, you know, some of the other trade talk we've heard.
Well, I still don't understand why we're talking about Darius trades when it's been made abundantly clear several thousand times that we cannot actually afford to trade him because it would not only ruin the cap for the rest of this year, like, I think we would go over the cap based on the penalty, but, like, we would be in cap hell for the next, like, 2 or 3 years. Like, it's actually like setting off an atom bomb in the roster to trade him. So I mean, from everything I've read, literally we like, there is not the money to do it. And I don't think that, and it doesn't matter if, like, somebody takes part of his contract or anything. So I don't understand why. I'm not mad at you. I just don't understand why, like, and in fact, given that this is a Jason Lockenfora report about trading Marcel Darius, it lends credence to the idea that I don't really trust Jason Lockenfora on these types of reports, because of course, like, somebody was probably talking about it the way he said it, and people weren't really interested because of his big cap space. So to me, it's a story that's not a story. It's just like, we've talked about it. Of course they wanted him off the team. It was pretty clear that he wasn't fitting in with the system, but they're stuck with him because of the way the contract's done. As for trading Cordy Glenn, or I think one of the Buffalo, I think it was Matt Warren on Buffalo Rumblings, sort of spread it out to, you know, maybe Mills or another offensive lineman instead.
Really, they have five tackles and three to four of them are considered, you know, quote, like a starter, even if not a quality starter, between Glenn, Dawkins, Henderson, and Mills.
I don't really want to trade any of them now, because if, like, we're in this spot where we're 4-2, and I just finished saying if they win the next two, they need to seriously, like, they need to make the playoffs. Well, you know what? I want the depth of having way too many offensive linemen available to me right now. I don't want to get a first-round pick. I mean, I think that's what they were talking about for a guy like Glenn, who's going to be a franchise, you know, lineman somewhere in the league next year. Maybe even in Buffalo, depending on what he wants. But I would rather have all those assets with me. If it's the trade deadline and, you know, my team is decent, I add bullpen arms. I add defensive players. I pick up the goalie I need. I go and get the forward I need or the whatever, you know, and I don't shed assets unless I'm going to get something back that I need. You know, I know for at least people in Buffalo who listen to this, there's a lot of talk about trading Sam Reinhart, who's the, you know, ostensibly the fourth center on the Sabres now, but he has a lot of talent and he's still young. And could you get a guy back for him like Noah Hanifin? I think that was the guy they were talking about, a defensive player, which is somebody Buffalo could need. So if you could trade Cordy Glenn for, you know, a very good wide receiver or a starting cornerback that might fill a hole somewhere else, that's what I think I would need. I would need some sort of trade that way to make this team right now better. If this team can make the playoffs this year, I no longer want to part with assets that could help me, that I could need, because one bad ankle roll and you're going to wish you still had whoever you traded. That's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, no, I think in some ways, the Cordy Glenn conversation is somewhat similar to the Darius one, in that it is a massive contract that you're dealing with. Obviously, the issues are somewhat different in that Darius obviously has kind of the effort or character or you know, whatever you want to call it, kind of personal issues, whereas right. Glenn obviously has more of an injury kind of concern, which is kind of lingering, and that may affect his value as well.
Yeah, and there's like a real legitimate fear, because if Darius breaks the drug protocol again, you've just traded for a guy who can't play for a full year with you. So it's not just like his character; it's like it could literally translate into games not played.
Yes, you have to keep all the sesame seeds out of your bagels at the cafeteria. Yeah,
right.
So it's a huge inconvenience for the training room staff.
Right.
I'm totally in favor of trading someone other than Cordy Glenn or Marcell Darius. If the value is there, I think. And that's to say, I don't think there's anyone really else on the tracking block. I think maybe one of the other tackles might be. I'm not sure what the value is for a slightly used Jordan Mills, or a slightly unused but in pristine, slightly unused Chantrell Henderson. So I'm not sure we're going to get a lot of value. And obviously they're not really interested in getting rid of the Dawkins, who they obviously just drafted, and they're probably trying to work in, and Glenn's the one who's they're kind of trying to ship out of town. But yeah, I mean, Dawkins looked good for a rookie, and that is very different than having a, you know, Pro Bowl caliber kind of left tackle. I mean, I forget if he actually made a Pro Bowl, but he's close to making a Pro Bowl, and someone we're going to need to rely on, you know, when it comes time for the playoffs. So I think, you know, I'm fully in favor of keeping two of them. And then, you know, yeah, I mean, I get some of the point that Buffalo Rumblings has been making, that, you know, we have five tackles and obviously we don't need five. Those are taking up roster spots for things like cornerbacks, where we actually do use, you know, we have four cornerbacks. It's entirely possible to have four cornerbacks on the field at one time. And especially when you're getting thin in a game where you might get one of them injured, like EJ Gaines kind of frequently ends up being, you are taking a risk by having more tackles. But I'm in favor of getting what you can for one of those guys. But at some point, you just kind of have to cut and run and say, well, you know, Chantrell or Jordan or Connor McDermott or whoever it is just not on the team anymore. And you just kind of take the hit with what you can. And I think that's probably what will end up happening, just because it seems like there's too many kind of damaged goods guys there, except for Cordy, who's got the other concerns of injury and cap as well.
Yep. I don't really disagree with either of you. Darius, I think, is untradeable for the reasons Frank mentions, and you just hope he continues to ramp it up with the Bills. Glad I don't want to see him get rid of. Franchise left tackles are tough to replace. Guy who's a good difference maker. I don't want to get rid of Dawkins either, because as Scott mentioned, he's shown some good upside for a rookie, and I think it's way too soon to cut bait, because you're not going to get nearly what you just paid for him in terms of the draft. I think when you look at the other two Mills, if a team like the Steelers or Washington or the Eagles are looking to rent him and willing to give up a late-round pick, I'd say, yeah, why not? I trust Chantrell Henderson to go in there. I don't think Chantrell's going to be tradable, because he's in the same situation with the drug protocol as Darius is, where it's going to be tough to sell him for much of anything. So I'm happy with – I like the depth. I like having this many capable tackles in football. So I hope they don't really make a move. If they do, I wouldn't mind seeing Mills for a later-round pick, which brings me to the – last point on this topic, which is one of the teams rumored is the Eagles. For those of you who may have watched that game last night and watched after Jason Peters got hurt and they carted him off, and all of the Philadelphia fans, not known for their kindness, just chanted Jason Peters. And I just thought, this guy, this was a Bills find, a rare great talent, and they piss him off. Because, again, we have a little bit of revisionist history. I think, oh, he skipped town and he held out even though he just signed a new contract. He signed a contract. And then they proceeded to bring in Hall of Famers Cornell Green and Langston Walker at huge, huge price, huge, huge salaries that were bigger than his. And remember, for those of you who don't remember, Chris Kelce once got a big contract from the Bills. And Aaron Schoble, even though he'd had a recently renegotiated contract, said, whoa, 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 what are you doing here? And they paid Aaron. They didn't pay Jason. Just one, I felt I needed some negativity in this podcast. So I had to throw in that one.
Yeah.
You know. It's stupid Bills, the way they treated Jason Peters. We wouldn't even be talking about left tackles right now unless Peters just got injured for the
right. Yep, we'd be talking about, could we track down Cordy Glenn to replace Jason Peters?
All right, so we have a few options today for this day in Bills history that I went through. One of them discussed briefly the Bills had lost to the Ravens on this day in 2010. I will give a name, and you guys see if you can remember the play. Sean Nelson.
He was the tight end.
He was a tight end.
Well, there was also the wide receiver, though?
No, that was David Nelson. All right. I was trying to see if that would jog your memory, but this was the game.
Oh, that was – wait, this is the game where – no, I think I have it. This is the game where they took them to overtime, and then they basically held Sean Nelson up. Like, they picked him up off the ground until they batted the ball out of his body, and then they took it, and that's how the Ravens won the game.
Ah, perfect. Frank remembers this one vividly, at least after the extra reminder. So that was
this game where
the winless Bills took the Ravens into overtime that day. So that was a very exciting game. I also remember that was the first ever game where Aaron Maben was a healthy scratch at the beginning of the end of that. So I didn't want to talk about that one. 2004, the Bills also lost to the Ravens that year, the game that Frank remembers is the last time he would go to M&T Bank Stadium. For obvious reasons. They lost the Seahawks in 99, beat the Jets in 93. I am going to go to a game I'm sure we all remember, back to October 24th of 1965. Yesterday, guys. Yeah, so this was the Bills were playing a new team in the AFL called the Denver Broncos. I think they're still around in some form or another. And this was really just a – it was a kind of a fun game. The Bills put up 33 points, 33-21 in victory that day. Excuse me, I said 33-21. Let me actually get the score correct here. This is what happens when you do something called overscrolling. They won 31-13. So it was a big game for the Bills. Cookie Gilchrist played well his first game back at the Rock Pile, picked up 87 yards on 21 carries at War Memorial that day, plus another 55 on three catches. They had some strong play from Billy Joe, who played out of the backfield. Six catches for 156 yards receiving for the Bills running back that day. There was – and by the way, Billy Joe is his name. That's his full name. And he said after the game, there's some hype leading up to the game when Denver came. They had the big signs up. Billy Joe versus Cookie Gilchrist, reporter said, what do you think about Cookie's performance thus far in the league? And – do you think it's imperative that you have a good game to vindicate yourself? These are football player quotes. Football players were intelligent as hell back then, apparently. So we talked about the hype in that game, but how it didn't really matter, and they were, you know, all for the same goal. So a great game for Billy Joe. Got a 78-yard touchdown pass from Kemp in this game. That was on a pass into the left flat that was intended for another receiver entirely, Paul Costa. Joe just snatched the ball at the Buffalo 35, chugged 65 yards to the end zone. That 7-0 lead stood until Gary Kroner kicked a field goal for the Broncos. The Bills, you know, got Ray Carlton involved. They had some more field goals. Carlton scored again. And before they knew it, the Bills had entered the season 6-1 at the halfway point. Booker Edgerson had a big interception of a first quarter pass. You can find the photo of this from the book I'm essentially reading out of right now, which is called Rock in the Rock Pile, discussing Jack Kemp and the good job they did leading the Bills to victory that day. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, is that the one? Did I give you that? Because I have Rocking the Rock Pile, and I wasn't sure if I gave that to you or if. Okay.
I'm just reading that on the old Google preview right now.
Oh, good. All right. Carry on.
Yep, and no problem. And there was a big one of the big, you know, underseen cited players in this game is someone who made a key call for safety, George Sames, to call a blitz that helped turn the game around. He said, we had them in their territory, and I called a safety blitz. George said, no, Harry, no, but we went ahead with the blitz, and he hit the quarterback in the backfield, causing a fumble, and that was a big turning point in this game. So the question is, I have not named this player. It was the signal caller for the Bills defense back in the day. He is a member of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Can you name this Bills 1960s defensive leader who also played for the Boston Patriots and the New Orleans Saints?
Wow, good question. I am sure I could if I had kept my football cards out from the 60s and I could look at them and I would be able to pick one out. Let's see. Mac Yoho was a fullback. I'm pretty, but he might have been a. No, he was an offensive player.
Anytime we can work in Mac Yoho, we're definitely gonna.
I mean, that was such a great season.
Yep. We had one episode where we really just tried to stalk his entire family, and then we kind of gave up quickly.
Yeah, really, very quickly before we got in any trouble. Daryl LaMonica would be the backup quarterback at this point because we have Jack Kemp already. As you can see, I'm stalling to see if I can remember anybody who played defense. there was a guy named like Albert
Goldmills Dubenian. He was a wide receiver.
Dubenian, yeah, he was a wide receiver. I'm picturing football cards. Scott, do you want me to give you a hint? Let's go to hint land with Scott here.
So, I want you to think small first.
Okay.
That's your first hint. Second, first name N, second name E. That's way too much. I'm giving you way too much.
First and second name E.
First name N, second name E.
E and thinking small.
Yeah.
I want to say it's like going to be like nucleic endoskeleton.
Oh, you're so close. You're so close. Do you want another guess?
Okay.
I was going to say Nelson Eddy, the singer and actor.
I mean, you obviously know the answer already, Paul, but I'll Bill Frank out here.
I wasn't looking. I guess. Go ahead.
You were very close, and that was a good guess. But you were very close. You were in very much the right train of thought. But it was in fact Nitrous Simonis Europaeae, the gram negative obligate. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It derives all of its energy. It says all of its energy. I think it's mostly energy. We don't know exactly where. I mean, again, it had to make those calls on defense.
Tackles.
I don't think you can do all of that from oxidizing ammonia into nitrate.
First 100% is the oxidizing. The last 10% is will.
Exactly. So he gets some of that from there. And again, you know, he did all this without using photosynthesis. Really pretty unique player. Back in the day, I don't know if you guys know this, but actually I see him all the time down at the pond where they're known to congregate. And, because we do have a little bit of a pollution problem when there's a lot of nitrogen, you know, in the Potomac kind of river drainage basin. So anyway, Nitrous Simonis Europaea is your Bill signal caller
on the defense side. Weird thing about this is that in all the years that this, you know, gram-negative obligate chemiolithograph autotrope played for the Bills, he never was part of a team that came back from 7 down with 3 minutes left to go. And you would think a guy like him could turn the game around.
Son of a bitch.
Never did.
I don't even want to. I have no more jokes because that's the joke we're gonna end the jokes on today. But I will note that I did Google Nitrous Simonis Europaea, which I'm sure I mispronounced, and the name that Nitrous Simonis Europaea went by in the 1960s of the Bills, no results on Google. You have to work hard to have no results.
Well,
that
done.
Is impressive.
Yes.
No articles mention the
– That's the deep web, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. So,
ungoogleable Bills players.
Which reminds me – $500 any listener can figure out anything the hell about Camille Loud, because Frank and I went into like a Camille Loud rabbit hole weeks ago, and you can't find anything about him online other than his brief career with the Bills. But he went by Nitrous Simonis, went by Harry Jacobs. Much
Harry
simpler
Jacobs.
Name.
So sure. That was my
other guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was a nice linebacker with Mike Stratton and John Tracy. He contributed to the AFL championships, including the one they won this season, the last time they won football championships, so good stuff.
Good point. Yeah, no,
I legitimately did not. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I did. It was an odd nickname, so that's probably why I didn't remember that. But yeah,
right.
It was.
I wasn't looking, and I swear I had a feeling it was going to be something that was not a person.
So. No, I didn't do it until you had already said it. I put it.
Oh, okay. Good. All right. All right.
Before we transition to Bills Raiders, I feel it's important to read the entirety of what is a fairly newly created Wikipedia page for Mac Yoho. So here that goes. Mac J. Yoho, born June 14th, 1936, is a former American and Canadian football player who played for the Ottawa Rough Riders and Buffalo Bills. And that was the entirety of Mac Yoho's Wikipedia page. I hope you have enjoyed it. So moving on to Bills Raiders. I know we're getting longer on time, so we'll just cut right into the predictions. Raiders, somewhat disappointing, 3-4 so far this year. Same record as the Jets, but have come on in recent weeks. Played just a thriller of a game on Thursday night, I believe that was. It was something to watch against Kansas City. A little bit more rest than the Bills, but they do got to travel across the country. We'll start with Scott on this one. What are you thinking as far as Bills Raiders this week?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, I think if this was not the 3 hours time difference, you know, the ESPN reporter Rodak did a good little feature on how the Raiders up until 2015 were like 2-15 going on the East Coast. But last year they won all three of their games on the East Coast, partly because last year's team was obviously just a much better Raiders team in general. But I also think this team, the Bills team, is a bit better. I think I'm a little concerned. Obviously, you have to be concerned with Carr and with Cooper. The good news is, on some level, obviously there's something to be said for playing a team when they're at their best. But Marshawn Lynch, for shoving a ref in last week's game, is suspended and will not be playing. So the Raiders will be basically down to a nobody and another nobody at their running back position. So I think that'll affect not just their running game, but obviously the pass pro as well. Though they do have a pretty good offensive line. You know, this one, it's definitely going to be tough. I could definitely see the Bills losing. I mean, the way the Bills lose is that, you know, Amari Cooper goes nuts and, you know, we can't deal anything. And Jared Cook also goes nuts, who's a good tight end. And obviously we've had trouble with them so far this season. But I think that actually that injury to Lynch does hurt the Raiders a little bit. So I see this actually, you know, maybe it's just kind of recency bias, but I do see it kind of playing out a little bit like the Tampa Bay game, where the Bills are able to make some progress on offense, but we still have problems on defense, but we end up pulling on at the end. So I see it. They also, Raiders have a problem with kicker, which we totally blew it on the Nick Folk thing last week. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know about him. But
they did, sadly. And cut Folk and signed a competent kicker.
Yeah. So anyway, I have the Bills winning. I'm going to put it at, like probably something like 33-27 or something like that. You know, something, you know, definitely more high scoring. So.
All right, Frank, what are you thinking?
Yeah, it's a weird spread. Once again, predicted score, Buffalo 28.5, Oakland 13.3, but somehow they're only 2.5-point favorites over Oakland. I will not understand betting. I do understand that that's a really small spread for a home team, particularly against a team that's traveling across the country and is now 3-4 after squeaking out a win. They beat the Chiefs. They're a for real team, Oakland. They can put up for real stuff, you know? And so I think that what I want to think about this game is, I'm hopeful that now this would be the third week in a row that they would have faced a decent quarterback, decent to good quarterback with a decent to good wide receiver. And maybe they will have a better game plan for how to approach this type of offense. I think that that actually is a really good test. If they can slow down this defense can slow down the Raiders, then that'll be a good indication, not only that, you know, they're a good team, but that they've been able to adjust. So I'd like to put my faith in the Bills and say that they can do that. We will see if Deontay Thompson and Jordan Matthews and Nick O'Leary and the plethora of other weapons, I suppose you might call them, can continue to score many, many points. I will say that they will not score 30 points this week. They may. I'd be excited if they did. I'm not saying they can't. I'm just saying I don't think they will. I think that they'll probably win this game. I think they'll win this game something close. It'll be 27-24, 24-21, something in that range. Certainly a losable game for the Bills, but I don't know. I'm feeling good, and I feel like they have a chance here if they
if they play these kinds of games like they've been playing, I think they're going to be okay and they're going to win this one too.
All right. Wow. So is I'm picking the Bills too. So as we predicted going into the year, the Bill we would have picked them to beat the Raiders this game, no doubt. But yeah, my opinions are much the same. The Oakland offense worries me. The defense is underperformed, but any defense with Khalil Mack is going to be a solid defense. We won't have Marshawn this week for the Hope reunion because he was busy shoving officials. You know, that's a shame. But he honestly wasn't doing much for the Raiders' run game this year. But that offense with Crabtree, just watch and Cooper and watching the way that they played against the Chiefs, that was their offense is scary. But they're not going to have the home field. The Bills' offense, you saw how loud it was on the play where Adam Humphries fumbled after the Bills had come back to tie with a three-play drive toward the end of the game with under 3 minutes to go and down by seven. So, you know, that's how loud it's going to be for Derek Carr and the offense trying to move it on Sunday. I think the Bills are, if they can have at least one of Poyer or Gaines healthy, that will help my feelings on this game. I still think it's going to be difficult to stop the Raiders. I think the offense needs to play another solid game. I think the Raiders defense does have holes. And I'll say the Bills are going to win a high scoring one, similar to both of your scores. I'm going to say Bills 31 and Raiders 28. So, all right. Any thoughts, gentlemen, before we head into the outro, as we know it in the biz?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
All right. So,
I feel like
if you have enjoyed this in this podcast, or even better, if you've listened to this podcast but not enjoyed it, and want to like yell at us, troll us, whatever you want to do, that's going to make for some great broadcasting. So, we will thank you for listening. You can find me on Twitter. This is Paul, twitter.com/BBillsMNY. I'll be live tweeting the game again. Scott handles our Facebook page, facebook.com/BBillsMNY. Frank, he's got all the equipment. He runs the Google Hangout. He puts podcasts everywhere, on iTunes, on the homepage, on Twitter, on Facebook. So he's the one who runs the show. And you can find him if you send it to send address to bbillsmny@gmail.com. He will read it sometime between tonight and 4 to 5 months from now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be about the thing. But
let me check the mail now.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna look at it while you're talking.
Yeah, no problem. And as we I take a quick Google as always. Let's see if we're getting up higher a little bit here. Now we're still on page two, but again, I think we're going to be on page two right now. The John Murphy Show, Sal Speak, you know, those are the page two podcasts. So page two is where it's at. Joe Biscaglia. So, you know, keep listening.
Paul, you are zooling a bit.
You did zool right at the end as you Googled there. So,
all right. Well, then I'm out. Have a good one.
Go ahead. I'll help finish it. We did the email, the Twitter, the Facebook. You can find us in the Google. You can look for us on iTunes, anywhere else. You can find a podcast, Google Buffalo Bills, maybe next year. BBillsMNY.wordpress.com if you want to see our sad little WordPress page. And other than that, for the Zooling Paul, who's welcome to say his name, I am Frank.
I'm Scott.
Paul.
Yes, very good. Good night, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.